I'm Beth Perrell here with Paul Driscoll, the program's director for Page 15, and we want to talk about their work. And Paul, we were recently speaking on the show to United Arts, and I understand that you work with United Arts to raise funding and have received one of their grants.
Yeah, United Arts have been a funder of ours for a long time, and I wish I could call out the exact number of years, but in Central Florida, they've been a real big supporter of the work that we do almost since the beginning. Been a really great partner and resource, not only just in funding, but in making connections and bringing creative, expressive people together just to produce things for our community in a variety of ways. So just a lot of great collaborative elements. And then obviously fundamentally in the world in which we live, you have to raise money to make these things happen. So in all those important ways, they've been a really great supporter and partner.
So your organization has one of those names that makes people wonder, where did that come from and where it came from and why it is also suggest what your mission is. So can you dig into that for us? Let us know about Page 15 and your mission.
I can. I'm glad you asked. We've been talking about this a little bit because, you know, obviously you want to your work to be represented in the name that you're presenting is Page 15. And it really is. It captures us initially. Our founder, Julia Young, her grandmother was a big supporter of reading and encouraging all the grandkids to read. And one of her rules of thumb for reading when Julia was growing up, her grandmother made sure you had to read to at least page 15 before you could decide whether or not you wanted to continue reading that book or move on to a new book. So that sort of persistence or perseverance or staying with it. And in all of our practice, that's a lot of what comes out. It's repetition over time, and it's about being invested in it, not just necessarily on page one or two or three. It's where are we as we are in page 15 and beyond in our creative expressive processes. So, yeah, just leaning into it. And that's the founder story of how the name came to be, page 15.
And it really boils down to persistence, and that's what you're trying to convey to young people?
Oh, well, we convey a lot of things. I think just to practice, actually, for us in the writing realm, so that's in the aspect of reading, just, you know, sticking with a book, letting it set up, letting it happen. For us, in our terms of our pedagogical philosophy and approach to writing, it's consistency over time. So a little simple formula we think about it like is volume, you know, writing a lot plus variety, trying a bunch of different styles and mixing them up. That's how you're getting out fluency. So those language commands are about that repetition, that consistency. And then there's aspects of choice and aspects of practice where you gain confidence and stability, and then that changes your perception of the writing. So when we have young people come into our writing spaces for the first time, they may not have ever written authentically before in their life. They've been written when called upon for school or for something specific like that, but never really listened to themselves and then expressed what was going on in there. And so usually on the first day, they're reluctant and they're not sure. And they kind of give you that first precursory, like, what is this about? And they're uncertain. But if you keep letting them tap into what is just their mind and their brain language and letting it come out, they start to become more connected to it more easily. And so by 15 days, let's say, as an example, that's not a marker of any kind of scientific value. But over time, there's a day eventually where they'll write out loud, this isn't that bad. And that you can tell that they've recognized that all that they're doing, it's not schooling and it's not measuring and it's not grading. It's all low stakes. And really what it is, it's just them thinking out loud, like just being themselves. And so there's a real joy that they find in that when they discover that it's what they're doing is really just existing and just being themselves, because they have a lot of permission to be humorous and to talk about and write about the things that are important to them. And so that personal choice, and combined with that journey of consistency and practice over time, they start to become a lot more confident in their ability to express themselves through language. And then with the design of our program, start feeling more connected to the other writers in the community. And so we hope that when called upon in the future in their lives, whether they're, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning author or they're, you know, just regular guys like myself, when called upon to use their language, they're going to do that with some confidence because they've been invested in it for so long. They've practiced so many pages and so much writing that it's really just an extension of who they are. It's part of who they are. So they can advocate for themselves, and they can communicate their ideas, and they can do things like genuinely speak their truth. Like, what is it I have on my heart? What is it I have in my mind? What is it I aspire to? I can manifest that through language first before I can then now, what does that mean in action? And so all of these outcomes are a part of that journey of writing and part of that consistent writing practice. So it's not just the fluency, it's not just the command and the literacy aspects, enormously valuable, but it's also social, emotional growth and development and wellness and that connection to self, and then also how that connects to a broader community audience. So as an artist, purpose, motivation, audience, community. And so we use this tool and this vehicle to try to impact all of those things in our immediate community and then spreading out into their own communities and beyond.
Okay, I have to ask you this, because I'm listening to you through the ears of an adult. And at some age, we start to be really intimidated that we don't have anything to say, to express. For these kids, do they have that same sort of intimidation about having something profound to say? I know you're saying be your authentic self, yeah, whether it's silly or whatever. But
that's the beauty. That's the beauty of youth, right? It's just like when a young person goes out to the driving range and picks up a club and they're just striping it. And the older person's over there trying to get their stiff brain and muscles to communicate and get and think it out. Kids don't think like that. They just do. And that's the difference is like when you're taking it out of the context of schooling and just making it like a pickup basketball game, like, yeah, let's just play with words and make something cool.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? Yeah. What does that mean? And then I start probing for, well, because kids think about things, right? They think about things, they make jokes, they wonder, they make inferences, they see things that they're like, huh, that's weird. But they don't realize that what they're doing is writing and creating. So all we're trying to do is just like, listen to that and give me that. And so then when they get to the point where they're like, oh, okay, their personality starts happening and they start telling you about things. And kids have little bits of expertise, like maybe they're a fisherman or maybe they're really into some dance or some particular type of music. And then if you give them permission, now they're the expert, right? And so just these little elements of personalizing and tailoring the discussion, the instruction, reshaping the perception on what the value is of your language, what it is as a tool and as a, for us, and the thing of empowerment, right? To realize yourself. And that's our internal language, how we think about ourselves and others inside ourselves. But now suddenly we have a safe space and a platform to express that outside. And so, whoa, wait a second. Now I'm becoming a fully realized person. It's not my own hopes and dreams inside my heart I don't share. It's me just really kind of being myself and being out there. And so we really love to see those young people come into that space where all of a sudden you're like, okay, they've got these chops now. They're confident now. They'll talk about themselves now as a writer. And we're like, yeah, it's the best. It's the best when a kid describes themselves on how they became a writer.
So how does this unfold? You talk about how you get together with them and you encourage certain things, but is this a workshop? Is this a meeting after school? What is it?
Well, it can be in a variety of ways, but primarily it is, if you want to think about it in simplest terms, a type of writing workshop. And so a lot of our programs are after school. We have a great space in the downtown recreation complex, in downtown Orlando in the neighborhood of Paramore, another one in the south part of the neighborhood at the Grand Avenue Neighborhood Center. And so we draw people to that as an after-school writing workshop. We call it the Young Writers Society, because for us, it's really bigger than the writing workshop. That is the vehicle, but we're building community, right? We're building empathy, we're building confidence, resiliency, all those things that help for these kids to be able to make way in the world. And so the routine essentially is pretty similar all the time. We try to keep it simple. We try to take out all the, we just demystify writing, right? And make take it out of academia and take it out of high stakes and measuring and grading and spelling and worrying about how does this reflect me as not a smart person, right? Because you learn in school, oh, I did this wrong, or I'm not good at this, or clearly English isn't my thing. That you start to pick up and the kids are very smart. And kids want to do well. And so when we create an environment where they're being really met who where they are, and they're being encouraged to start with that place and have their own voice, we kind of change the perception of what writing is. And so they come after school a few times a week. We get together, we do a lot of free writing and open writing. We do some prompts and we encourage challenging each other for style, but really leaving it up to them. And then we have our friends from a lot of connections with the university systems around us, really great connections with the University of Central Florida and partnerships with a variety of their programs and interns that come over to support our work, whether it's people in the social work realm or in education or in writing, creative writing, marketing, all kinds of different models that have are examples of this is how a writing as a vehicle can lead to. It's not just poets, it's not just novelists, it's, you know, people who write screenplays and people who are in marketing and people who are in engineering, and you start, you know, seeing all those things. So we create that atmosphere. They all write every day. That's the ticket of admission. And then every day, a big part of what we do is the spoken word, which at the end of a session, everyone gets an opportunity if they choose to. No one has to share if they don't want to. Get up to the mic and then go and use those auditory skills. And that's a moment in our session where not only are we teaching some of those auditory skills, giving voice to real voice to your writing, but also what it means to be an audience, what it means to be on the receiving end of that communication as an artist and a consumer of art. And then not just a consumer passively, an active consumer in that I have ideas to help you. And so there's a little, at the end of everyone's reading, people can raise their hand and give comments and suggestions. They can ask questions. Guests that are visiting ask questions. And some of the leadership in terms of their friends from UCF, some of our alumni, like young people who were in the program who are now seniors in high school and post-baccalaureate people. So that little community now is building around and sort of exponentially increasing the impact of all these, all this writing and all this sharing, and realizing that the burden of our humanity and in our immediate community is shared. You know, we're not alone in these struggles and these challenges. We're not alone in these joyful celebrations also, you know. So it's not just writing about things that, which is important, grief and managing grief and handling circumstances that are really difficult as we all grow. It's also about building community in that, heck yeah, we're great.
I know part of the Page 15 mission is to advance critical literacy skills. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds to me like being an audience and having an opportunity in that community to kind of discuss the messages and the meaning, because there could be so many meanings that we derive from a message. So is having that opportunity to be with others part of advancing critical literacy skills?
Yeah, for sure. Because now you're critically thinking about it, again, like we talked about, is that active and passive part of just being a passive audience to now really actively listening to the language, listening to the intentionality of the author, hearing and recognizing the devices that they, literary devices that we may not talk about openly. We may not say that's an example of a simile. They just hear it and it works, right? Oh, that collection of words makes it make sense to me when I hear it in my ear. So they start picking up, and that's the best part, is they start borrowing from one another. And so that auditory element of really hearing how the language works, which is really where we hang our hat, it's like kind of the Suzuki method of writing, is listen to it, you know, trust your instincts, but listen to it. Because we want them to have not memorized fluency because they know all the rules, because grammar and English, I mean, it's obviously, we know it's got it rules and exceptions. It's about being able to wield it, to being able to use it. And so the listening aspect of the pedagogical philosophy is just such an important element, because you can see them out there developing by being exposed to older writers just a little bit, a junior or senior in high school, and the kind of work they're doing now after years of being in the program, but also being with peers where they're like, oh, I can A, do that, or even better, like, ooh, I can do better than that. So they get that little competitive fun thing. And then it is an audience. What's cool, having an audience and training them, because it's about being respectful, and that can be hard sometimes when in young communities, as they're pretty boisterous, but when they start to really learn why that's important, that it takes courage to be on stage, and that you as an audience are part of this conversation. You're not just here. You, without you, it doesn't work. And so teaching them why that's important and teaching them to do that, now they fall into becoming more active listeners and they pick up on things. And I'll frequently raise their hand and have an insight that you're like, wow, that was just really incredible. And it was just them being a human being listening to the work. And so, yeah, they pull out so much just by training that. It's almost like, you know, when you become a musician, you listen to music differently. And when you become a writer, same type of thing, you hear it differently and you consume it differently.
I think I asked you the same question when we had a conversation about a year ago. But it just fascinates me because you've said it again today that you want to help them find their authentic voice to be authentic. And it just begs the question, what is authentic and how do you get them there?
That's a great question. What is authentic and how do you get them there? Great question. Well, authenticity, obviously, we just simplify it as real. Like, so for the kids, it would just be like being real, right? That is saying it how it is. Like, I'm not orchestrating this. I'm shaping it for audience, but I'm not orchestrating it for our audience in a sense that I'm giving you what you want. I'm giving you what you need, and I'm considering how to give it to you as an audience, but you're not controlling the message, right? It's my idea. I came up with it, right? So it's like the aspect of choice, where a young person comes to the motivation on their own. It's so much different than when we as practitioners tell a kid what to do, you know? So like we have the authority to be like, this is how we're gonna do it. Let's do it this way. But it's more interesting to draw it out of them. And then if they're connected to it emotionally and it matters to them personally, now you get what every teacher and educator and coach and person that's working with young people wants. That's motivation. I want to create this. I want to be successful with this messaging, whether it's something that's really like serious or impactful, or it's just like a really funny joke, you know? So, and humor is one of those great ones. It's a great motivator. And I think about for my boys, and that's, I'm just stereotyping. It comes to girls the same way, but generally speaking, young boys who don't come to language as quickly or have as much to say, you know, you give them permission to be funny. And now suddenly they're like, give me the microphone, give me a notebook, I'm going to get a laugh. And so that there's a motivation to that. So like, there's even value in letting a kid just be silly and funny as a writer.
So many preferred writing styles are playing off the visual. Do you allow them to kind of bring that out, not just through using words to be descriptive, but maybe even doodling a little bit to kind of open up the mind?
Yeah, I mean, I love that question. It's by any means necessary, right? There's so many entry points to language. Another reason why it's a little different than school, when we work through one unit at a time and everyone today is going to work on this specific type of poetry and we're all going to write a sonnet. Maybe my vibe isn't a sonnet today, right? Maybe I got a different feel or a different vibe. I have a different idea, and that's coming to me now today. And so by letting that thing be wide open, kids come to it with doodling. Like, in fact, it's a really great example because that's a type of writing. And so we actually unfortunately run into young people who are really working at a deficit with their language command. In fact, it's significantly limited. It's heartbreaking because you can see that there's a story there, right? There are ideas. It's just they don't have the skill set yet and the command of language to manifest it in prose, right? But they do have some imagery, and they can start in that by blocking out scenes and doing images with pictures. And so, well, a lot of times when we find that circumstance, I'm like, okay, what do we have? We have these pictures and we have these ideas and we have this sequence. And so language essentially is just encoding and decoding. And so now we're just encoding with images and pictures. So that would be an example of using that as a vehicle to then language, because then it's funny because they'll be able to start talking about that picture they created and we'll start finding footholds. This is really remedial, fundamental hard work at that end of it and how we find success there. But there's also aspects of just visual creative thinkers and young people who come to us that think their language in graphic novels. It's just an amazing different mind. Minds are just so incredibly unique, which is why we love to tailor. Not one is like another. And so we'll get young people to come through our work that they're just so expressive with their language. And you can tell that they have just this really interesting ability to find expression in characters beyond what we all of us are usually doing. Do you know what I mean? We're doing the best I can, but there's something in the way they're doing it. They're like, okay, they really can speak through this. They really, there's a long way to answer your question that, oh, absolutely. What a wonderful thing to include. It's our ability. And what makes us successful is just like, we can try that. Like, we want the kid to have the idea because that's like the most important thing. And then we'll figure out how to facilitate. Can we get this to a product that they're in visualizing? And that's the hard part. Like, they're visualizing something and we're trying to help them realize that somehow and make that communication work. So yeah, definitely visual arts as a vehicle in communicating and expressing just for the audience, but then also as inspiration. Because for me, as a practitioner, it's all the same thing, you know, like all these artistic expressions are just versions of the same part of our humanity. So it's all the same process, creative process manifests in visual, film, song, dance, theater, all of it. It's just really cool things that we humans do that make it amazing, right? So it's just being immersed in that unique process and then being open to all the possibilities there. Like, kids can write for film and television. Kids can think like that. Sometimes they'll write things for a duet or a screen or a stage play of some kind, you know, because that's how they're imagining and creating. And then doing collaborations with illustrators. We're doing, I think it's our 15th annual, could be more, high school anthology. And we partner with always an illustrator in the local community. And what we have is a bunch of high schoolers who submit, and we choose the best 15 that represent Central Florida. And we think we'll really make a quality book under the theme. And then the illustrator does an illustration inspired by each one of their works. So each work, as you work through the book and each page, it comes with its own unique illustration inspired by whether it was the narrative or the poem or whatever was selected for publication. So there are all these elements of bringing art together and making that part of the same thing. Because even like visual artists, having a journal or a reflection on what is moving them, what is motivating them, what experiences are they having that are speaking to them that are then going to be part of their process. So writing as a vehicle in so many ways is so interesting and unique and important for how we share all the arts, how we talk about all the arts, and how we communicate between each other. Have you seen the exhibit at OMA yet? And I'm using my language to talk about how it experienced with me. And then you're going to be like, oh my goodness, yes, I was there and I saw, and then you're going to do it for yourself. And each one of those is not exactly like the other. You know, we'll have these shared ideas and new ideas, but it all came through our language. So we shared that other art through our language. We left the film and with our language after having dessert, we talked about the movement in the film and used our words to really enjoy it and celebrate it and savor it together as a community or as a partner or as a friend. And that's where language and art really are just like, it comes all together in our humanity.
Well, now I have to get at the non-artistic questions too. The program obviously sounds so effective and so powerful for these young people, but I know when funders ask you questions, you have to give them the data, as it were. So let's hear that end of it. Tell us about the impact, the long-term impact of Page 15.
That's a really great story. I wish I had anticipated this question because I could like pull up the data and look at it and tell you specifically what we're seeing. But, you know, just talking broadly and generally, you know, a way up in the sky view, we measure outcomes like resiliency through surveying, and we measure outcomes like empathy through our surveys. Confidence and command of language, we measure that through frequent surveys, surveying of our highest attending authors. And so we find in our outcomes that a great majority of our kids, you know, beyond 75%, are finding this confidence, finding this voice, feeling the power of their empathy, feeling connection to their community, and then feeling more confident in their ability to speak their truth and to communicate what they'd like through language, whether it's written or it's spoken. And so we pay very close attention to measuring those outcomes. And then We use a specific tool for measuring resiliency. And so those questions are basically about, you know, feeling how, your feelings of confidence, some of your connections to community, but just measuring, do they have that those tools to withstand some of the challenges and pressures that they also face? You know, a lot of the young people that we serve are in really good situations, but sometimes challenging situations because of the circumstances of the communities in which they live. And sometimes there are those adverse childhood experiences that we talk about can be referred to as ACEs. But there's also PACEs, which are positive childhood experiences that can offset some of these adverse childhood experiences. So we try to really think of ourselves as that space. And so unfortunately, we do get a lot of young, creative, talented people who come through our programs who are in some crisis, are under some pressure, are experiencing versions of neglect and versions of even abuse. And this space that empowers them and allows them to realize their voice and their potential is one of those positive experiences that helps to really galvanize them and strengthen them for what they have to endure and what is the reality of their life. And it's a harsh reality, but it's one that we all know in our society that there's a challenge that we're facing. We have young people living in circumstances that need to be better. And a lot of challenges manifest from that, but you love to see them process it and work through it and find confidence and realize that, yeah, I've got this power and I've got this ability. And, or even if it's not even just empowerment, I've got this place to let a little bit of it out here and just take a little bit of the pressure out. And you can see them move it along. You know, it's not miracle work. There's still challenges when they go home. There's still challenges for them that week, but they put it in a different place. They put it in a different spot on the shelf where it's more manageable for them and it's in perspective. And we're happy to be a small part of creating a place where they voluntarily take themselves off the street and up the stairs and come into our space to feel that community and to contribute to it also.
Thank you so much for telling us about this today, Paul. I want to let people know that they can find out more at page 15, page15.org. And I want to give you an opportunity for just any final takeaways for us.
Oh, in closing, I feel like I am doing like a lecture or something and I'm enclosing a lesson. No, I really appreciate you sharing our story and giving us an opportunity to share what we do. We always find ourselves so immersed in the work and so focused on the young people that we're serving that we forget that maybe we should tell some people about this great work we're doing. We'd love to have people come in for tours and visit. If someone picks up this and they're like, I'm just curious about that or interested, we're easy to find, like you said, at page15.org. If you just want to follow what we're doing on the social media, page 15 Orlando is our Instagram handle, and there's always some fun stuff coming out there. But yeah, we welcome community to come visit. It's inspiring in person. You see young people realize their potential through writing and be empowered in that way. If you're looking for some time to just get a good buzz and get a good feeling, come and call us up and have a tour.
Paul Driscoll is Programs Director for Page 15. I'm Beth Perrell.